Okay. Well, my name is Kim Marnie, and I am a senior high school teacher at the Hills Grammar School. And Hills Grammar School is in the northwest area of Sydney. Now, not many of us here, but however, do any of you actually still teach or are teaching currently, whether it be at primary, high school, or in the tertiary area? Student teachers, so you potentially will be teaching?
Yes.
That's good. That's good. And
sorry, no.
No, you're not at the moment. Okay, that's fine. Well, my background is actually in the area. I've been teaching for like 18 years now, and the last 12 of those years have been using in the area of IT, which is computer studies. And one of the things I have learnt in my time of teaching is that students tend to be a little bit lazy. Like, they are very good at using computers. However, they tend not to be very proactive as finding out information for themselves. They rely on the teacher, and I don't particularly like that because I feel that once they leave school, they're going to have to be on their own. And analogy I always keep telling them is that when they've got this new computer game, they don't have me there telling them how to do it. They just work it out for themselves. Now, I want them to use that when it comes to their schoolwork and when it comes to their learning, so they become a little bit more independent learners. Now, the unit that I'm talking about is actually from the Technology Mandatory Syllabus. It's a New South Wales syllabus. It's taught to Year 7 and 8, and it focuses on project-based learning. It also looks at, and we were meant to teach it, through the design process. And a design process is where they are given a scenario and they need to do research, they need to look at alternate solutions, as well as come up with a solution and then create it, then evaluate it, and then that's it. However, what we do in technology mandatory is that we can use a range of technologies. I, at the moment, am using information technologies. However, we can also design projects around food technologies, textile technologies, you know, wood technology, any of those things at all. So the aim of what I'm going to talk to you about, and the reason I started to use a learning management system in my classroom, was so that the students could have a place where they can access information really quite easily. And the purpose of doing that is to make them more independent learners and also make them more engage the students more, so they become more responsible for their learning. Now, this is the situation which my unit was taught in. They have to create a web page. Now, there's a number of skills the students need to acquire to be able to do this, using graphic software as well as using a web-based a web editor such as Dreamweaver, which is what we're using. They only have 12 weeks to complete this project, and then they move on to another teacher who does another project in another technology. So we give them the situation. Now, the process that I usually follow is that I teach them how to use the software, and then I give them exercises where they can practice those skills that they need to require. And then after a little while, I kind of figure they look like they're understanding what they're doing, and so I give them the project, and then they have to work independently on the project. Now, the issue I constantly came up with is the students will always ask me, I've taught them how to use the software, I've taught them all of this stuff, or so I thought, and they do know it, but they lack confidence, and it's far easier to put their hand up and go, Miss, show me how to put a table in my web page. How do I insert the link? How do I do this? How do I do that? And I'm thinking, why did I waste the lessons preceding this teaching them? So what I wanted to do is I wanted to break this habit of them asking me first. And I want them to have an attempt at solving the problem for themselves before seeking help. Now, obviously, there will be times when they will still need to call upon me, and I'm more than happy to do so, but I want them to take the initiative to at least have an attempt at doing that themselves. So I decided what was needed was some type of easy, accessible place where the students can be directed in the first instance to go to seek that help. Now, you may say, but the the applications that I was using do have a very good help section in it. Or you may say, well, why don't you just tell them to go on the internet? There's plenty of tutorials and that out there that can help them. But what you find is that if those areas tend to be very general and the students need to learn how to cipher through all that information, and they tend to get distracted, and it's very difficult, especially for a Year 8 student, to do that. There, if you let them go on the internet, before you know it, they're off, you know, looking at some other site that's nothing to do with your lesson. And in some instances, the internet can be quite a time-wasting exercise for them. So I thought, well, I need to make this in a way that the students with direct information straight away, what they need, and it's not going to be wasting a lot of time trying to sort through things. So I decided to start using a learning management system. And the system that I actually used is Moodle. So what I've done is there's several slides showing the different features of my Moodle site. I put up here what the task was they had to do, any due dates, any deadlines that they had to meet. They have forum there as well, so if they wanted to, they could pose questions. I never really pushed the forum at this stage with them, but that would be something that I could possibly do further down the track. They had a course blog. At the end of each lesson, the students had to go onto their blog and type something about what they did today and what problems how they felt about the lesson, what issues did they encounter, how did they solve that issue. Now, depending on the quality of the student would depend on how much they wrote. It was really quite interesting, especially when I came back and read them. And one of the students said, "You're actually reading that, miss?" And I said, "Well, yes, what did I get you to write it for?" And they've been quite honest in it. And they said, "Oh, no, you're going to be grumpy with me." I said, no, your input's important. So it was a good way to measure and reflect not only on their learning at that time, but also on their interpretation of my teaching. So that was quite handy to have. Now, I also in Moodle, I had a whole range of different worksheets there for them. So any documentation that I handed out, they were there. Now, they can access Moodle at home. Now, this is just an example of one of the worksheets, and this was actually a practice exercise that they did in PaintShop Pro. So it was step by step how to create a banner, and at the end there's a banner there for them. Now, they can come back and reuse this worksheet when they're creating their own banners for their own websites. Okay, their website may not be on the Solar system, but the steps on how to come up with a banner using those graphic tools will be there for them to use, and they just apply it to what they're doing. And even the fact of how big should a banner be. Now, so we'll go to the tutorial you did, have a look, it's there. So I'm not having to forever repeat what the size of certain things needed to be. I also created little 2 to 3 minute tutorials there for them, especially when it came to using Dreamweaver. And also in PaintShop Pro, I created this little basic one there for them, so they know which tools, where to find the tools, how to open up a new file, and all that type of stuff. Now, the purpose of doing this was so that often the students have a specific question. How do you create a table? That is all what that tutorial looked at. It didn't look at anything else. So if they wanted to know how to create links between their pages, there was a tutorial there for that as well. And what I found is by being so short in nature, the students were more inclined to listen to it, follow it through, and then learn from that. So if they did have to come back the next lesson to do that again, it's still not taking a lot of their time, and it's still very focused on the actual skill that I was wanting them to use. Now, another thing that I put on my in my Moodle site was sample work. Now, they all had to do a portfolio, so I gave them introduction. They learn a software there called Exe Learning, was where they were creating their portfolio in. So once again, there was instructions how to do that, as well as a sample portfolio. They had to create a storyboard. And the storyboard was a concept that a lot of the students struggled with. they're much very happy to create their website, but actually to get them into a process of thinking, planning, and then creating was very difficult. And they weren't allowed to actually start using Dreamweaver until they had created their storyboard. So I got them to, I gave them a sample so they could actually see what are the different features of the storyboard. And this was only one format of the storyboard that I got them to use. Some of the lesser ability students actually, I got them to have a piece of paper and pencil and draw on that paper where they wanted to see things. And then I got them to do it like this and break it down for them. So that the more advanced student was able to go straight into this type of format for it. So I just highlighted certain features that they had to do. Now that was always there for them. Now the other beauty of using a learning management system as a resource repository, I was able to log how many times the students went on to Moodle to use those particular features, so I could then evaluate which students were struggling a little bit more. So then I would know actually to go in and help give them a little bit more time if they're constantly using those resources, so help them a bit more. The student blogs I found were very informative for it. I kind of like wished I'd read them perhaps a little bit more ongoing. I kind of left it to the very end. But next time I do it, I'll be very, very much following it up every 2 weeks or so, what they're writing to evaluate how they're going. And the discussion forums is something that I will be introducing the next time I teach this unit. I've used discussion forums before in years 11 and 12 with different degrees of success. And I think once we start getting into a habit of using these things, they actually would be better. So by the time, if they use it in year 8, by the time they get to year 11 and 12, they'll be far more comfortable in using it and using it far more responsibly and getting more out of them. So does anybody have any questions?
In terms of when you introduced them to Moodle,
yes.
What did you do to sort of, in the introduction process?
Well, Moodle is fairly quite simple to use. All they need to do is to log in. So each student gets given a username and a password, which we actually mapped that to our school's network, so they didn't have to learn anything new. And then it's just a matter of what you saw. You logged in, you go to your course, and students could be in several courses, and then just click and it opens.
Right.
No, they went straight into the Moodle. How I used Moodle in this instance wasn't as to replace me. It was purely like just a resource centre for them to access when they required it. It wasn't that I said, now this lesson go to this part in Moodle and do this activity. For these students, I still very much wanted to be the teacher in the room. There are other instances where we've used it where that's been the case. All the stuff you need is at this part of Moodle, and you just work your way through it. So it's very much, you know, click, open, there it is. And in Moodle, I could have put questions, like activities in there, such as, you know, multiple choice questions, short answers. I can get them to submit their assignments and that as well in there. So there's a lot more, I didn't use hardly any of the features of Moodle. I just use it purely as a resource depository. The repository for this particular course. I have, in fact, I said with my year 12, I've used it as an online study forum where I did use the, I used the wikis and the glossary features of Moodle as well. It was far more interactive. That's the purpose of this particular application of Moodle was as a resource. And if you were to use LAMS, LAMS has the same similar type things as well.
Just in terms of the discussion forum,
yes. Yes.
So people would find out what they had to do, and then they would just do that. And there wasn't so much motivation to discuss things. It was just, what do you do to get the 10 marks? I'm going to do that, and then I'm out of there. How do you get students to actually want to be involved? I mean, you said start at a younger age, but...
Well, when I used it the first time, I didn't even think to add marks to it. So it was just purely, and it was an online study group. So there was no point in putting marks on it. But by me monitoring it all the time and giving the students feedback, and I think whatever we do, we need to be constantly giving the students feedback. And so if you are there monitoring what the discussions are happening and add your little bit every now and again, so perhaps, you know, a little bit more detail here, and if you give a marking criteria as to just having the three inputs doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get three marks. It has to be quality. So you would have a marking criteria that would relate that. And everything that we do...
So do you recommend having a marking attached to it or not?
Oh, definitely. When I use it, next year I'm teaching Year 11. The first time I used it was for Year 12 IPT. Next year I'll be doing Year 11, and I'm definitely going to be using the online forum feature part of it, and it will become part of the accessible bit. And I'll be posing questions that require the students not to regurgitate information. I want them to give an opinion, to evaluate, you know, the higher order type of things, so they can't just, you know, put in two words. They have to justify all those higher order thinking skills is be wanting what I want to get from them in doing that. Now, by getting students to, and the practice of answering questions that way, when they come to sit, like in New South Wales, we have the higher school certificate, which is an external exam. And the more opportunities that students get to be able to answer, respond to questions, and you give them feedback on that. Now, also in Moodle, on a forum, if you're doing it that way, other students can also give input. And I encouraged the other students to actually answer some of the questions. So if somebody had a question they weren't too sure, they would post that question up there. And then another student will come along and say, well, this is what I think. And, you know, so get a bit of a collaborative environment happening. It's really quite interesting. This last 3 weeks at school, we've been having an enrichment program where the students have a project to work on. It's across faculty areas. It's quite large. And they have a forum there. And I just looked at it the other day. This is Year 7. And they're not, you know, anything special students. They're just, we're a comprehensive school. These students... one person got on and said, don't quite know what we're meant to do here. You know, I'll explain, but, you know, can anybody help me out? And this other person said, oh, nah, I'm not too sure either. And this third person came in and said, well, this is what I think you should be doing, blah, 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 blah. However, I'm doing this other unit, but you should ask the teacher just to make sure I'm in the right spot. And I thought that was really cute that this person, nothing to do with that unit, actually came in and was looking and was using. And we monitored how many students actually went on to Moodle that weekend, or that week, it was a night. They were offered the project the day before. And, you know, quite a significant number of the Year 7 students actually logged on to Moodle at home and, you know, did something in Moodle. Yes. No. Yeah, definitely. And there will still be opportunities whereby you don't want them, but it depends on what the outcome of your task that you want them to do. If you want them to develop skills, best way to develop skills is to have feedback. And feedback not only from your peers but from the teacher can be as valuable. And also getting other students to read other students' answers can help develop their skills so they know what is the good...
Yep. I'm just saying that, like, my son is doing his HSC and he sits there and he's got the computer open and they're just comparing notes on everything that they write. And it just seems, like, different to the way that...
Yeah, we did it.
I did it. And I thought it looks like he's wasting time, but actually the whole time they're talking about their homework and it's
yes.
A very different mindset. But I guess if the kids in Year 7 are going to be really into that.
Yes. Yeah, that's why the earlier you can start them through... the better it is. But we've only been using Moodle at our school now for about, definitely this year in a big way, but, you know, the last 2 years we've been gradually phasing it in.
It's just a little
white.
How are the labs set up?
At school, we have pods of 7 computers in a hexagonal or heptagonal thing. We have 4 of those pods around in the library, which we have, well, that feature. Then we've got some other part of the library where they're an L shape. In some of the other classrooms, they have like little breakout rooms. They have two classrooms, but in between the two classrooms, there's like a breakout room where they have eight computers in there. So depending on which room you're in.
Are they set around?
No, the eight computers in those rooms are actually against the wall, and there's glass around it, so the teachers in either room can see what the students are doing in that room. In another building, they've just got laptops in that, so we've got a wireless network set up in that building. So it's evolving, our computer set up in the school. Anything else? Thank you.
So when you're ready, there's a mic, and just want to press the record button. Who's presenting? Are you presenting?
Yeah.
Do I have to? I don't know. Did you volunteer?
No.
Oh, then no.
What's that? Do you want the mic?
I don't know.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah. We're like free sparrows.
Sorry. Let me do that.
No, you can pull it into some folder.
Do I?
Go back to folders.
I really like the resource
repository. An old there? No, a couple of folders.
Oh,
yeah, you got
folders.
Really very
clever. Publish one? Drop so. Oh, is it?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Tom,
when did you start?
Half past. No, 5 minutes.
Is that okay? Could you? You can, if at the end of it you don't want it to be put on the conference website, you can not say before.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just a bit worried because I work for the monastery in Wellington, New Zealand. If I say something controversial,
which is quite possible with me.
Wireless computer. Just checking that wireless.
Yeah, switch over.
Yeah.
And it's this one? Kia ora, my name's Eddie Reich, I work for the ministry. We'll just sort of give you a little bit of background before we start, very quickly. I'm from Wellington, which is around here, and Robin's from up here in Whanganui, in the Taranaki region. He's handing out this handout. It would be nice if you, while I'm babbling on about our background a bit, if you just read through that first bit, the introduction, get a bit of background on where we're coming from. If you're looking for what I work on, if you could copy that URL down, which is www.v6.breezeserver.co.nz/MOE, that's basically a bit of a PowerPoint on steroids. If you play it, it has audio, also have the notes, so that's the sort of area that I look after. So I'm going to soon hand over to Robin to let him do, but I look after a number of national servers and video conferencing units across the country, which is managed through this virtual learning network. So we coordinate the classes and the courses and the different technologies through this system. So if you just have a quick read through that first page and the introduction, then I'll hand it over to Robin. Or you, mate. This is about Robin's project, which is a full immersion program. When he's ready. That's you.
Well, kia ora everyone. My name's Robin. Just a bit of background about myself. I'm a school teacher, project manager for a rollout of LAMS in New Zealand within the primary sector for years 0 to 8 within Māori Immersion Schools. Just a bit of information about that. Māori Immersion Schools, all instructional language is in Māori. There's no English, so it gives you a bit of an idea about what we're about. The project started 2005, I think, way back when it was LAMS was version 1.1. And Karen was working there, and we looked at the system, did some testing, and looked at translating the whole system for use within our schools. So what I'm aiming to do this afternoon is just give you an idea about the work that's been done so far to roll out, and how we use learning design in our whole approach, because we used it right through. And that was really good for me, because I needed to make sure that I was doing the right things for ministry. So, you know, I didn't want them giving me a slap around the ear or anything like that. So, but anyway, hopefully, we'll be able to see that this arvo. I'll just bring it up.
If you weren't in the workshop yesterday, James sort of thanked Robin here. He was the first guy to do the translations for Lands, so that actually gave the process for doing the translations for Lands, which is the other language now points itself on. So it's got a little pat on the back.
Is that full screen? Oh, right. Okay, so this is about where we are with LAMS in terms of fitting it into our learning situation and increasing the learning experience, making it more enjoyable for the learners, using a whole different lot of elements, including online and offline, to make the experience as good as it can be. For the teachers, and it's been reflected right throughout the conferences, how one lays a path out, learning path, that some people see as a lesson, but myself I see as a learning path from beginning to end and components in between, and we try and get them to do what we want them to do at certain times for a certain purpose. We're looking at a blended learning approach, so that's traditional and e-learning. I sort of refer to it as online and offline these days. It's actually easier to explain that way to many people. This particular sequence here is quite short. We haven't really had to make lengthy sequences for our students. One reason is because of the student ratio technology stuff. So in a lot of our schools, we're only looking at like one computer for five students or something like that. So teachers have to manage that when they implement LAMS into the classroom. So we're sort of playing with the idea about how we structure the activity, the purpose of structuring the activity that way, and looking at some other ways that we can do it, as well as sort of trying to help the schools come up with the technology for the learners. This one here is an example of a static content that we use for within LAMS. We have a couple of sources for static content. People were mentioning web pages, linking web pages from LAMS and so on. We use a couple of methods. We're using, if it's not in LAMS, then it's in a repository that's based on an Adobe Connect server, which is a really useful tool for teachers. The content is created on PowerPoint, and you install a Breeze server plugin, and it transforms it into a SWF file, which is Shockwave file, which is really, really nice for the internet. And that can be housed, you know, that could be on your Moodle site, that could be on your network, that could be anywhere. But it's compacted all together. It's a nice small file size. Over the LAN, it's really quick. Over the internet, it's still quick. And even dial-up is still fairly quick. So, that gives us a little bit of flexibility in terms of localization. In New Zealand, we have eight dialects, Māori dialects in New Zealand. So, and depending on where you are, some people prefer their own dialect as opposed to others, and so on and so on, in their learning content. So that it has a more personal feel to it. So allowing that in all the systems that were chosen for the rollout is quite important for us. So we have to look at all those types of things when we go. Oh, and as you can see, this is my language basically. So all that there. For those of you who have never ever seen it before, you know, I really don't know. So
we're gonna give you a
teaser. Another component is using digital learning objects. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with Learning Federation objects. What we want to do is have LAMS, Learning Federation content, if we can, our own content, as well as the other content that's housed on Breeze server. all coming into the same activity, into the one activity. So we're not moving from one place to the other. We've got one point of entry, but we've got access to five different sources of information, as well as the activity.
So that's sort of my part of my job is managing all those servers and looking at a national sort of instance of Adobe Connect, video streaming, video conferencing, LAMS, Moodle environments, so that they all connect. And part of the technical issues of backing it into the student management systems, looking at all sorts of different ways that we connect those together, making sure it's pretty seamless for the schools. And with the different projects, because we have obviously mainstream children, we have integrated schools, we have all sorts of different kinds of schools, but with Maryland, we have different dialects. It gives us an extra layer of complexity of how we actually back in databases and make them work. So that's part of my job, and through the virtual learning network, which I'll show you a little bit later, is when Robin's project, which is around about 5-6 schools now, which is sort of primary schools, starts to develop out, how do we manage that in a good pedagogical manner rather than technical, because the technical is a bit of a no-brainer, really, for me, anyway.
Yeah, so there's a whole heap of issues that we've also had to look at. So,
I was just going to say, the digital learning objects, we got about 8,000 of those from Australia, so we had a contract over the last few years to get some of those. But there is difficulties because obviously we have to get them translated. So the Learning Federation aren't particularly happy with us changing things. so we're sort of using...
Without them knowing.
Creative ways of doing stuff. But we have more content created from our national library and our national museum department.
So that's one important aspect with all this work is the language. It's sort of sitting up there at the top, simply because it can't be any other way. So it's simply not suitable for the use within our kuta. So as Eddie said, I have five kuta. They are in, kuta are schools. They're based across the lower North Island of New Zealand, and I have three remote schools. So the LAMS is like really, really good for me in terms of like keeping an eye on students in those locations. And yesterday I checked online to check some progress of students from the motel room next door. So, you know, that gives you some idea of the power and when you can do this, how you can do it. It just makes it so simple. We just log in, check the monitoring and away you go. And it's sort of, just never stops, which is sort of scary.
So the process was,
Yeah, what we did is we sort of handpicked some people within these kuta and I pulled them together and put the idea to them about becoming leaders within their schools for the rest of the teachers within their schools so that eventually I wouldn't have to do that. It was sort of like build and grow as we go. I build and grow with that small core group and then we just filter out and filter out and filter out and eventually the whole school will actually become a model for others in the area, nationally, and stuff like that. So, LAMS is like I've looked at a lot of systems for e-learning and stuff like that, and to help teachers. And I haven't really come across one as good as LAMS, to be honest. It's really simple. It lays out the path. If you want to get into pedagogy or learning design, you can do that simply. You can even do it without knowing all that type of stuff. And it just and there's a feature with the preview. It's really, really excellent. You can see the learning happening there. Before you even roll it out, so yeah. So this is a scenario that we've used in the schools. This is a numeracy activity. We have LAMS, of course, LAMS there. This is an activity that was built in Adobe Connect, which is I'll go into that later. And this here is a learning object for counting 1 to 20. So it was designed for learners from year 1 to 3. And it works really well, actually. It's the kids just love it. You sort of can't really keep up once you get into this mode of rolling out e-learning via LAMS or any system, but they seem to really take a particular shine to LAMS, and they just want more and more, and then you've got to keep up, you know. You've just got to keep up, otherwise, you know. Or you could just say, no, go offline, we'll do traditional, right, from now on, you know. And until you sort of get to that point whereby you can, where you can actually create as a teacher. For me, I'm of the mindset that teachers just don't have time to do that. So I I, at the moment, are doing all the activities, which is, you know, it's part of my job. I like doing it. I can roll it out. I can give them access, and that means they don't have to do it. What they do for me after hours is train. So, and that's when we do our training. We do it online. And, yeah, and it seems to be okay.
I think that's the stage. Because the schools are so quite dispersed, we have a lot of those in New Zealand, a lot of the training now is done through Adobe Connect, and the ministry offers a free audio video conferencing sort of line to, or free audio to most schools in New Zealand. We don't have free video, but they use, yeah. So they use, Robin's been using Adobe Connect where you can share desktops, so you can actually show staff through stuff and use the audio. Obviously, including footprint stuff, but also very good for cost efficiency and just in time training, I think, yeah.
Yeah. That's really nice. I mean, there's just no way that we can pull teachers out of our schools too, because we can't find relievers. We have, traditionally, we have small kura, so, and there are very few relievers. So principals especially tend to panic a little bit when we want to take them out of the classroom, because it means that they have to use their contingencies, if they have one, to put another teacher in place in front of the kids. So, yeah, it's another reason we use online. This here is this is how I use Moodle, and it's at the moment I'm using it as a repository. The repository will be a collection of LAMS activities with units and stuff like that, and previews and stuff. Adobe Connect material, that's the flash stuff that people can download and include into when they're ready to build and construct activities. Curriculum. Sections for, you know, same again, whatever's needed there, and then resource development. The resource development is assisting teachers to construct activities for themselves and giving them the support. So in terms of like the support, it could be like a recorded session of a training session within Adobe Connect. I put that online, they play the session, I just put a description on it, play the session, and away they go. And that can be done, you know, while they're lying in bed, or whenever they choose. And yeah, so that's basically the picture that we've got at the moment. And I think that's the last one, yeah.
Any questions?
Any questions so far, yeah.
Just for my curiosity, where are the schools?
Where are the schools?
Lower North Island of New Zealand. Oh.
Where?
We have one school in a place called Hawera, which is in Taranaki. We have another one in Wellington. We have two schools in Whanganui, and we have another one in Ohakune, which is below Ruapehu Mountain. Yeah. So, oh. So, for those of you who don't know New Zealand, we'll just go to the map now. So, I have one here, one in that region there, two around that region, and another one sort of where that green dot is, if you can see that. Yeah. So, yeah, now... Oh.
You know, the Learning Federation objects were talking about you having difficulty with those in order that you change them, etc.
Yep.
Have you looked at the cost of buying those objects and actually getting yourself a multimedia developer and a graphic designer or something to build your own?
Look, this was a contract. I've only been at the ministry for a couple of years, so I picked a lot of this stuff about a year ago. So this contract goes back 5 years or so, right, with the Learning Federation. I don't think it's going to continue because there's a lot of home-built content anyway, and content's really not an issue for us. Well, I don't think so in this modern world. So, yeah, we're going to do a lot, but we've got these things. We paid a lot of dough for them. We really want to get the best use out of them as we can, and sort of look at the technical infrastructure that I'm looking at is that, you know, the New Zealand's quite a unique situation, I guess, in a lot of ways, where we've got 2,700 schools. We've got a lot of rural schools. We've got a lot of quite small schools. We've got schools in the Chatham Island. So if you look at our networks, the schools get to decide, we give them operational money, and we actually don't have a central way of pushing stuff out, all right? We can't do that. We actually give autonomy to each of the schools, which makes life very difficult. So we fund them, and they basically, the principals with the Board of Trustees decide what happens. So we can't force them to do anything. It's a very nice thing in some respects, but it's also a pain in the butt when it comes to IT, because network management, all that sort of stuff is a real issue. Most of our schools have only got a 1 meg connection. 80 of them still got a 512 connection. 80 of them are still on satellite. But we're running video conferencing through 512 connections and getting really good results. And what with Robin's project, when it becomes business as usual, or starts to get to that business as usual, when the process is mapped out and we can map that onto other Kura and other schools, we will coordinate that sort of stuff through our virtual learning network, which I could show when we're finished.
Yeah, cool.
How long have we got?
Oh, we've still got heaps. what I wanted to show you now was just sort of how we looked at, or how I looked at learning design in terms of the project for me in particular. So, yeah, I've just got this up. I'll just bring this up. Oh, what? Some missing graphic.
Somebody
stole my picture. Yeah, so basically I looked at the situation, current situation and current teacher practice within schools, and I thought it was maybe a little bit chaotic in terms of, I suppose it was a borderline chaotic random, I guess, and I felt that there was a way to make it better, and I felt that LAMS was going to help me do that, so had a play with it, did some testing as you do, muck around with it, and looked at some development and design, looked at implementation, how was that going to happen, and what form that it was going to take, and basically followed some guidelines. And I just used like something real common like ADDIE or something like that, just to stick to it and just make it simple, so that in my explaining to the teachers about what I was doing and why I was doing it this way, this particular way, that they could relate to that particular model, because it was like pretty simple. So in terms of that, so the learning design was about, for me, a few things. Looking at the structure in the first instance, looking at helping teachers to realise that if we go through a process of analysing, develop, design, implementation, evaluation, and whatever learning activity we're doing, then we will have a construct that would suit and will be actually quite easy to implement both online and offline. So we had a play with it and got the core group together, and we just spoke about it and just discussed things, and showed them a couple of applications of this particular model. And they decided that, okay, let's give it a go. We'll do it this way, this way, and this way, and this way. And so far, everything seems to be going okay for us at this time. I mean, I don't know whether that'll happen when we scale up, but at this particular time, it's okay. Seems okay. So in terms of the use of LAMS and the design model, if you like, we wanted to blend everything, and that's really about the systems coming together, as well as the teacher coming together with their knowledge and their resources that they have, their abilities that they have to put learning in front of the children, and put it all together, sequence it out, to think about when we want to switch from online and offline, and we're using the Stopgate because it's just a little bit more controlled, sort of self-paced enough for students to take their time if they need to take their time. But for those who are in a bit of a hurry, they can get there in a hurry, but they can't go any further. So, and then it moves from there online back into the face-to-face situation, and they just keep going. And it's also about like making the experience as, you know, as good as it can be, so, and all those different elements that we have. And kids are pretty good at moving from one aspect of technology to another, back to face-to-face, go to the technology again, and then sort of switch just like that. They're actually better than teachers, and they're like just, I don't know, it just seems to be a part of them. We want to do that, maximise the stuff so that we just bombard them with really, really good learning experiences, basically. It's going to take time to get there, but that's our goal. We just want to have really, really good learning experiences for our kids online, offline, and we want to use everything that we can. So yeah, we take it to the max and we just go hard, basically, yeah. This one here, that the content must be the best that it can be also, that it's, with all the different elements, it's always going to be rich, but it could take it to another level if the content within all those elements are as good as it can be as well. So we've found so far in the rollout or the trial, whatever you want to call it, pilot, I don't know. I'm not sure what phase we're at. It's some phase, but we're just going hard. And we've found with the kids that we're looking at, they're on the computer for about maybe 25 to 30 minutes. This is year six up. And they do it independently. From year four down, that we're looking at round-up dial. From year four to two, some are doing it independently, some are doing it shared. We've had a couple of scenarios when we've delivered it to the kids. For year zero and year one, we've always used an introduction, very first step for the kids. So, and that's a guided lesson, basically looking at what we've got here. The kids are right next to you. You're discussing, you're talking about the activity, you're talking about the learning within the activity, you're talking about the content, and you're helping the kids to realise things within it. And at this point in time, teachers have decided that, oh, maybe, you know, in year zero, we've got a couple of year zeros working independently, which is like, I just think that's amazing, you know. So, because I was, personally, I was actually quite worried about rolling out to year zeros. I'm thinking, oh, because I... Five, just. I think it's changed now, the structure. We used to have year zero, and it depended on when they were born. So if they were later than July or something like that, they were one. It was really hard to understand anyway. So I think they've just gotten away with it. And we're just all year ones. So done it that way. Someone earlier was talking about the need for an introduction within all learning activities and LAMS. I totally agree with that. Even up to year eight. It doesn't hurt. If you're looking at complexity up to year eight, then I think it's a good idea to look at introductory. And it also gives, it makes you inclusive of the learning with the kids, because we don't want to remove that. We want our teachers to still be involved with our kids and their learning, sharing it, but give them that time to, pardon me, that time to work independently within LAM. So, and that was another reason for us going blended learning approach. Yeah, I think that's pretty much self-explanatory. Who uses LAMS in here? Just you, Karen? Oh, okay. So, yeah. So, does everyone understand what that is? Okay. LAMS tools, stopgate, different tools, different colour, different tool. So, we've got three learning tools there and two instances of one. Sequence it out and do that online and offline. Learner mode, we want to pardon me, build the knowledge like we all do, carry on doing that, make the content good, make the language as good as it can be. We want to look at the process in terms of like not only halting the learning like in a LAM sequence, but also having time to reflect on it, reevaluating it, going through that process. So it's analysing, design, develop, so on. External DLOs, yeah, we as I explained before, that's a big goal, and it's actually quite a big project, that one, making those available. And always get feedback, any scenario. Make sure that activities within LAMS in particular have that component within them, and try and control their chaos. Yeah. We have a language commission in New Zealand, and they're sort of like a quality assurance system for our language. So in terms of translations and stuff like that, I do the translation, send it off to a registered translator, and they'd be going by the commission's sort of QA criteria, if you like. What that meant for us is that we had to have systems whereby if people wanted to change it, we needed to give people some form of localization if they needed it. If they want localization, they can create it, because, you know, I don't know what their dialect is, and oh, you know what I mean? So it was important for that localization stuff to happen within the systems.
Once that localization had taken place,
yep.
Is then that captured somewhere for somebody else to use if they wanted to use that particular localization?
Yeah. Well, because of all the activities are reusable anyway in all the systems. Yeah, you can. Yeah. Any other questions? Cool.
Just very quickly, what I do is basically once these projects start, so we've got things like itinerant music, so we're running cello, drums, bass, and voice through video conferencing and capturing it, and they're doing it through the internet and through video conferencing equipment, and so we're doing things like that. We're doing junior languages through Adobe Connect. We're doing professional development for rural farmers. That sounds a bit crazy for a ministry to do, but they are going into the local schools and using the local schools' equipment, the computers and all that sort of stuff. So the virtual learning network is about coordinating that across our country. So basically, these are the courses that are going to be running in 2009. We strip off the courses in 2008. These were specifically targeted at our year 11, 12, 13 kids in rural areas because they don't have the breadth of teachers if there's only 12 or 13 of them in a smaller school. and we do, a lot of them started off predicated around the video conferencing, so we have that video conferencing button, but we also know that the other bits, the virtual learning network, which is the technical environment, the LAMs, the Moodles, that sort of stuff, if schools can't afford it, they don't have the technicians, we want to build a national sort of instance where they can come in and they don't have to worry about that sort of stuff. The professional development obviously is huge as well, plus the research and development, the resources and the support. They're all there, but they're not actually fully implemented, and there are issues. But what we're doing now, we're actually including things like, instead of video conferencing, we've got just web-based courses as well. So I think if we do a bit of research on that, there is probably about 20-odd. But we're also involving our tertiary organisations. So some of the ministry strategic objectives are things like Kahikatea, which is Māori language, which is Schools Plus, which is the transition from school into tertiary. So we're running a lot of tertiary courses. So for instance, agriculture's coming out of, we're actually doing Japanese, and we're also doing aviation out of Catlin's Area School, using 3D animation stuff. But you've got, those are the number of schools that are involved in the just web-based conferencing this year. Or next year, I should say. And if we take that tick off, we just got a new search. I think there's about 100. This year there was 168 courses. There were 1,200 students involved. There were about 240 schools. We had 150 teachers. And that's growing, I suspect, around about 2,000 to 3,000 next year, probably. And we're changing. We're looking at and talking to, across the country, talking to what we've got as e-principals. We've got about 12 or 13 clusters across the country, and we've got managers in them called e-principals now, and they're coordinating the schools within their group. And we're trying to organise the professional development on a national basis, those sort of things, the needs for them, also these courses and how they do it. We're concentrated on that year 11, 12, 13, but we're actually obviously moving into different areas like 0 to 1, and how do you coordinate that? It wouldn't be a selection of courses, but we don't know what it is. So we go out and talk to the different groups as to what they want, and we build what they need to actually make sure that everybody knows what's going on, if that makes sense. So it's really a collaborative site. Teachers log in, and they actually enter their own courses. So they enter their own courses, and they put in what they're capable of. So when you click into one of these courses, you can actually see that what's in the course, what will be assessed, how it will be assessed, but they actually tick the button, all right? So if they don't want to offer email, they won't. It's up to them. It's about their capabilities, so we're giving the power back to the teachers to be able to develop. If they want to add MSN, Pixthing, Texting, whatever, they just tick the box. And the dream is that the student will be able to come on here, pick the subject they want, when they want, how they want, with who they want. So when we talk to teachers, it's about looking at this environment and looking at their topics, whatever they're called, as in digital format. With a video conferencing, the teachers are only seeing their student for 1 hour a week, if that. Sometimes they only send them twice a month, something like that. The rest is in an online environment, and we're still getting 85% retention rates with 85 to 90% pass rates. So there needs some real talking, and it's been quite useful with the different clusters you saw on that map. That was the sort of different colours, was the different groups that the e-principals look after. So that is the coordinating between the principals within the schools and the students about the courses and how this works. We don't want the different sections to reinvent the wheel, so it's about the Maori building their own. So this would be incomplete today for their particular thing, and we could have it in whatever, doesn't really matter. But just the coordination between those, and that's how we're sort of trying to manage it. That's it.
Sorry.
Can I ask a quick question about the assessment guys? A lot of the courses that were listed there, are they part of the national curriculum?
Yep.
And so is this a common assessment?
Yep.
And
that's
NCA. That
It basically, if you've got a teacher at Roxburgh Area School and they're teaching, they might have 4 students in their own school and 10 across the internet and in the webby thingy. They will coordinate with the e-principals. So for advice and guidance or whatever it is for students in their home, they will look after them in their home school. So you have the e-principal, but you also have homeschool teachers. Quite often the parents or the teachers will have interviews with the parents online, through video conferencing or through audio conferencing. They traditionally, at this particular stage, will fill in the other school's reports, and the NZQA qualifications just go through the normal process. So it's a homegrown solution, but it's grown from the ground up. It would never have been top-down stuff. It would never have worked. You know, it's been going for 5 years now, probably. Yep.
Speaking from the top up, what's the relationship then with the correspondence school?
Might I ask why? I used to work at the Correspondence School, the virtual learning network. This is where this was born. The Correspondence School has gone through a number of different restructures, shall we say. The idea of the Correspondence School, traditionally the Correspondence School in New Zealand was about 85 years old. It delivers to secondary duals and to distance students. It's got more into the exclusion, where kids are kicked out, so the roles got a lot bigger there. The part of what we were proposing to the Correspondence School was to have a core base of, say, 30 or 40 staff within Wellington. At the moment there's 300, up to 300 staff, and you would have the rest of the teachers teaching in the schools that still have touch, and this is what's happening with this network. We're having ongoing conversation with the Correspondence School again about how we move forward. Because in New Zealand you've got that, you've got the virtual learning network, you've got the Correspondence School, but we also have 3 health schools. We have Northern, Southern and Central Health, who look after our children who have cancer or something like that, have to go to home, but they are looking after those kids, but they're getting courses from the Correspondence School, but now they're getting courses from here as well. So it's a matter of looking at that whole thing and saying, well, which fits where and how, really.
A question.
Yes, well, I'm in the government, but it's part of the problem. When I left the Correspondence School, within a week I was at the ministry, put it that way, so it was interesting. Yep.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. You have to, there wasn't much time.
Yeah.
I suppose it wouldn't hurt to sign it there. I'm doing a fair bit of work with Aboriginal kids. Okay, yeah, and I mean, language obviously is a huge problem. But unlike you guys, we don't have social inclusion here, you know, and even the people just don't understand that these kids, English is their third language, second language, you know? But education's still all done in English. It's not done in their own language. So, of course, it's all dying. They're dying, you know?
True.
It'd be so cool if we could use this to put things into their language. But now, using your tool that you've helped develop, like changing just the way
I hope so.
Maybe I can look and do that sort of stuff with them.
I should talk to Ernie and James about having an Aboriginal language got for them.
Awesome.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
You got
a card?
Yeah.
I'd like to just keep contact.
Colin and I were saying,